Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's snowing in Omaha, Nebraska, where we find the governor, Tim Brando, the one and only. He's calling a great game on Saturday on Fox, the Big Boy Channel, at 2:30 Eastern between number 5 Xavier and the Creighton Blue Jays. I got to tell you, Tim called a hell of a job, by the way, calling the North Carolina Duke game the other night. I was watching it, and, you know, you're just fantastic. And the fact that you turn right around and you're banging this game out, it just shows you're the man. I got to tell you, when I look at these teams, though, Governor, are they identical. Creighton may not be ranked, but, I mean, in every single facet of the game, they're dead ringers for one another.
I think they're 25th and one, not ranked in another. Great being with you, Scotty, as always.
My man.
They are very similar teams. The one major difference is inside, where, you know, there is a triple-headed monster for, you know, Xavier, and they won't have one of them tomorrow. The big kid, Tyreek Jones, the more of the power pivot of the three, won't be able to go. But Sean O'Mara and obviously Cantor, who Kerem Cantor has been outstanding of late. He went for 22 the other night in the win on the road that they had to go to overtime in against the Butler, did it again at Hinkle, which was a great game. I mean, we've had unbelievable back-to-back nights during the week. Wednesday and Thursday nights of this week were just off the charts. And they last played in the CentOS Center in Cincinnati, and it was that size that was the difference in the game. Creighton just could not keep up with their low post play. Now, remember, Creighton lost Martine Crumple, who is their inside player, back on January 17th, and they're trying to get this kid from Australia, Jacob Epperson, to come along to maybe help out Toby Hegner, but they'll be undermanned in the post just as they were the first time they played, Scotty. I think the difference is this building –
right.
I mean, CenturyLink is worth 10 to 12 points game in and game out. They're undefeated at home. Not many people are undefeated at home in college basketball, but this is a great home court. I think it's the best home court in the Big East. And I would tell you the second best home court is in Cincinnati at the CentOS Center. And I think Butler's is probably next. I mean, those three are just hard places, real pits. But this place is even bigger. It'll seat over 18,000. It'll be a sellout. This town loves their coach. I mean, they love Greg McDermott. And they're a tournament team. This is a game where Creighton can improve their stock, maybe get their seating up into the 5 or 4 area and maybe off that 6 or 7 line, which is where they likely are now. But without Tyreek Jones available to them, it's just a little banged up. He'll probably be ready to go next week. I think what Creighton wants to do is just really light them up, play as fast as they possibly can. It'll be very similar to the Duke Carolina game in the sense that the big's advantage goes to Xavier, but the quickness and the helter-skelter play, if they can go small, if Creighton can get Xavier to go small, then they have a chance, I think, to maybe get an upset win here. J.P. McCura, that's another factor, has been in the middle of a big-time slump. I mean, other than Trayvon Blewett, who's their best player, J.P. McCura is probably the least liked player in college basketball since J.J. Redick.
Really?
And, you know, he was the 6th Man of the Year award 2 seasons ago player. He's been slumping the last 4 games. He's on a 7-for-22 field goal route in the last 3 games, 1 of 10 from downtown in the last 3 games. But he's one of those guys that really stirs it up. A player that I think every teammate loves and every opposition player can't stand. And their fans, the home fans, can't stand JP either. So they need that. I think Xavier needs him to catch fire. They need him to be the kind of player that he would normally be. If you're looking for sort of a Grayson Allen type that plays in the Big East. McCura is that guy. He hasn't had incidents like Grayson Allen did a year ago, but he's the least liked player in the league. And I think that's a good thing most of the time for Xavier, a player that plays with edge, that attacks the rack, that creates open shots for everybody else. If McCura comes out of his doldrums, I think that it will keep Xavier in it. Therefore, I think we're going to have a whale of a game, probably right down to the wire.
You were over there with Coach McDermott. I saw you were hanging out with him, and two things. One, tell the stories that you were talking to him about Al McGuire. And then secondly, tell the you had to have gotten something out of him about his son with all his movement and trades. He just got dealt from the Knicks again in the Moutier deal.
Yeah. Well, I think in terms of that, he's sort of happy that Doug's been moved because he thinks he's going to have a better chance to play. You know, that's maybe in hindsight, you know, that's the one thing he told Lynn Elmore and myself. And so we touched on that briefly with him. That picture and that tweet that I put out had one of his staff members, Preston Murphy,
right,
in the tweet. And you might remember back in 1998, Rhode Island – with Jim Herrick coaching. Now, this was after Lamar Odom, okay? This was Cotino Mobley,
right,
Tyson Wheeler, that team in 98. Got to the Elite Eight where they had beaten Valparaiso, Bryce Drew's team, you know, after that miracle shot,
right,
Easter play against Ole Miss. They beat Florida State in the second round. And then in the Sweet 16 in St. Louis, that year I was paired with the great Al McGuire. It was, at the time, probably one of the greatest breaks of my career. You know, only four guys get to call a regional final. And when the executives at CBS told me I was going to get to work with Al, I was thrilled. And I called the late Dick Enberg, who was a mentor of mine,
right,
who was still over at NBC at the time. And I said, Dick, I'm going to be with your guy, Al McGuire. And I need your help. I need, you know, I've worked with Packer. I've worked with Vitale. I've worked with just about everybody that's anybody, but this is a real thrill. I love Al. Everything about him I've always loved. So tell me what I need to know. And Dick is only Dick Enberg could say. He said, Timmy, listen to me. For the next three weeks, you're invited into his world. Just enjoy the ride.
Right.
Okay? I mean, it's going to be unlike anything that you've ever been a part of. And he was so right. Al couldn't remember anybody's name. I mean, he couldn't remember Bernard Toon's name.
Right.
I mean, Butch Lee he knew, but Bo Ellis, I'm not sure. Okay? he couldn't remember anybody's name. Jim Boylan, I don't think he would know Jim Boylan if he ran into him.
Right.
So Al couldn't remember names, but he was great with nicknames. So Cotino Mobley was known as the Cat. So he was the Cat. And Tyson Wheeler, who was his backcourt mate, they were one of the best backcourt tandems of the country at that time.
Right.
He called him Wheels. The kid with wheels and the cat. Okay. So we're doing the on-camera for the Elite Eight game with Stanford. Arthur Lee, Mad Dog Madsen is playing.
Right.
Stanford came from six down to win the game. But the third guard, or as Al would say, the third guy that got to is Boise. The only kid he could remember the name of was Preston Murphy,
right?
Who's pictured in the in my tweet,
right?
And I was pointing out that was Murphy, and he says, "If you can't scratch the cat and you can't stop Wheels, they'll bring in Murphy." And you can't forget about Murphy. So after we get through the open, I turn to Al and I say to him, "Hey, Al, that was great. You remembered Murphy's name. How'd you do that?" He said, "Well, the kid is Irish, isn't he?"
Hey, you got to work with, like, listen, you got to work. We've talked about this before. You got to work with all the greats. When you work with a guy like that and you work with a guy like Raft, I mean, you basically have gone to basketball heaven.
Yeah. No, you have. And you follow their lead. And you enjoy the conversation. I've said many times, Scott, and I've always viewed it this way, whether I'm with Lynn Elmore tomorrow or with Raph next week or with Donnie Marshall another game or Stephen Bardo the next,
right,
it really doesn't. It's four eyes and two mouths that are watching a game that hopefully are having quality dialogue. Okay, it's not my narration and then their analysis. It's us working together as one.
Right.
That's the way it's supposed to be. And you know, Raft is so keen on what's really going on when the ball's in play.
Right.
You just let him go. Okay, and when the ball's up in the air and it's time for me to make a call, I make the call. And then we react to one another. And his playfulness, his willingness to force it out of you.
Right.
Well, you know, the team's communication is really good. You know, the coaches want everybody to talk to me, which is in sharp contrast to me right now working with you. You know, don't do that. Okay? And you just got to be willing to play along with him. But the one thing about Raft and the same thing with Al McGuire, you can count on whatever they were saying. And this is true even with Raft today. You can count on whatever Raft is saying. 5 seconds ago, he didn't know he was going to say it. So it's remarkably fresh.
Right.
And it's he's saying something like no one else could possibly say.
Right.
When Valpo was about to go in that same tournament, when Valpo, a 13 seed, was about to maybe punch their ticket to the Elite Eight, it would have been the first time a 13 ever made it to the Elite Eight.
And I grew up there. I grew up in Valpo.
My producer says the whole nation is coming from UCLA and Kentucky, and we're joining our game. So the whole country on this Friday night is coming to our game in the Sweet 16, and it's Valpo against Rhode Island. They said, Tim, you got to ask Al what it would mean for a 13 seed to get to the Elite Eight. And so I said, Coach, do you hear that? I got to ask. And so Al didn't know what he was going to say, so he started rubbing his hands together. He stands up. He's like having his own seance. He's like, Timmy B, I don't know what I'm going to say. What am I going to say? I said, Coach, we're coming on the air in 5 seconds. We're coming on camera. Sit down. People on press row are like, what's wrong with Al? Is he having some experience with the Twilight Zone? He's getting up in years. So I sat him down and I said, Al, if the folks from Valparaiso get to the Elite Eight,
it'll
be the first 13, what would this mean for college basketball? And Al said, Timmy, it's something that only college basketball could deliver. It's like a Norman Rockwell painting. It would be perfect. And only in the Big Dance can you have a Norman Rockwell painting in sports. And I'm thinking, what in the hell? Think of a Norman Rockwell painting.
Right.
Now, that's not something anybody else could say.
Right.
And it was refreshingly Al, and that's what made him great. It's what makes Raftery great. And,
you know, listen.
The beat goes on.
A couple things I want to say. First of all, I don't know if you heard me in the middle of all that. I said I grew up in Valparaiso, so I was a little kid.
Yeah.
I grew up in Valpo, and I used to go to the Crusaders games at the Valparaiso University, and also then later when I was like whatever, I don't know. My dad ran U.S. Steel's PR, so he was in Gary, so we lived in Valpo,
right.
And then I would eventually come back after being at Indiana or something, and I would. One thing led to another. I would deliver, this is before I went to college or something at Indiana. I would deliver pizzas that summer down to the university. And I would, end up, trying to hook up with sorority girls when I would deliver them their pizzas on the Valpo campus. And then the other thing I wanted to say to you was this. And we're going to come back and talk more with the governor because I got more I want to ask him about College Rack and that North Carolina game the other night. But this is what I wanted to say to you. And I've told you this before, but I want the audience fresh right now to hear it. When you were doing CBS studio work on college football and whatever, I always thought you were the best in the biz, hands down. But I got to tell you, without a doubt, when I've been watching you do these games, the play-by-play, since you started doing them on Fox, and when you left here and went to Fox, and you've been doing these games now, and I got to tell you, I have never in my life seen anyone having more fun than you, and it's coming out big time in your broadcast. You are really doing a hell of a job. You're having a blast. You're calling games. You're invigorated. You're fantastic. I just think you're great. We'll come back with Tim Brando. He's doing the Creighton-Xavier game tomorrow. We'll talk more with him about that North Carolina game the other night. So I was saying, we were talking to the governor, the leader of men, play-by-play extraordinaire, Tim Brando, Fox Sports. So I was saying, and I don't want to repeat myself to be painful to you, but to others, I want the audience to understand, like, when you used to do the studio show in New York every you know, weekend forever, for decades, you were doing it, and then all of a sudden, you know, you start doing play-by-play again, and whether it's college football or basketball, but, you know, watching you do the basketball games... Now, this is just me. I think it's come out. It's pretty obvious to me. I mean, the travel might be a pain in the ass, but you're calling the games. You seem like you're having just a whale of a time, and you're just loving life doing this. I mean, because you're on more than ever, and they're handing you these giant games and assignments like tomorrow, and then the North Carolina Duke game the other night on the ACC Network. Everybody knows now how much of a badass you are. Doing play-by-play of college basketball, it's got to be pretty gratifying to know that you've gone from that studio presence of domination to being the guy to call when it comes to doing a big game now in college basketball play-by-play. It's got to be pretty cool for you, isn't it?
I'm at a great time in my life, Scott. I mean, a great time in my life. And maybe some of that freshness, if you want to call it that, in my approach, and I appreciate the compliment. I really do. It never gets old to hear that. You're certainly going to hear a lot of other things too, and it comes with it. You know, I'm certainly not worthy of the praise, nor am I as responsible for the mistakes that some deem that I make, but it comes with the territory. It's subjective. But if there are others out there that feel as you do about me, I would just say to you, I think it's the stage of my life that I'm at, and the fact that all those years that I was in the studio, I probably didn't appreciate it as much as I should have, because I was always chasing something else. I was chasing being at the games, being in the booth, not being in the studio. In a lot of ways, that was a flaw, a character flaw maybe that I had. And it probably hurt me at different times in my career, and caused me to make some of the moves that I had to make. Not everyone is going to be Jim Nantz. Not everybody's going to be Joe Buck, et cetera. And so a lot of us have to make adjustments and make decisions and career forks in the road, so to speak. And for me, landing at Fox when I did, at a time when they were picking up greater inventory and getting more into the college football and college basketball world with FS1 and additional games on Big Fox in the college arena, you know, the timing couldn't have been better for me.
Right.
When I made that switch. That's one of it. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is the people I'm working for, many of whom are 15 to 20 years younger than me now, they kind of grew up on me to some extent. I may be a part of the soundtrack of their lives. And the level of respect that I've gotten, not that I didn't have respect at CBS, I certainly did. I
right.
had a wonderful time there. And I certainly got respect and enjoyed the 9 years that I spent at ESPN and the handful of years I spent at Turner, too. But when you get to be my age and now all of a sudden you've got grandkids, you know, a 17-month-old and a 7-month-old at home, you appreciate
right.
The privilege of getting to do what you do. And all those years of chasing and maybe trying too hard to get things that maybe were outside my reach are over. And I'm at a stage now where I'm able to say, and I have said this to the people I work for, wind me up, tell me where you want to go, with the understanding that every time you tell me to go someplace, you're going to get 100% and more from me, because I felt like for a lot of years I was missing time and reps in the booth. I wanted to be in that booth so badly in those years that I was in the studio. So it just worked out from a timing standpoint. And by the way, the visibility that I got from being versatile enough to do the studio
right.
has paid great dividends for me, you know, at this stage in my life too. So everything happens for a reason. And as good as CBS was to me over 18 years, and as much of a career break as doing Game Day was in 1987, when that thing started 30 years ago, had I been more patient, had I been more willing to let my career come to me as opposed to chasing, maybe I wouldn't have had to make all the moves. But then again, I don't regret any of it, because I wouldn't have landed where I did. You know, some people have failed marriages
right.
and have to move on. Some people have bad agents and have to move on. I will tell you it's a lot cheaper to have made different decisions on going to different networks than it is having multiple wives. You know? So it all just worked out.
Does your wife?
The best time I've, and I think you appreciate more, too. I appreciate what I'm doing now more than I ever had. So I think I'm actually a better teammate, and I want to help the younger people in the business, too. A lot of young people, like Greg Jennings did his first NFL game in early December. Our college season was over.
I remember.
The folks at Fox asked me to go to Lambeau. I was like a kid in a candy store.
I remember.
I a December game in Lambeau. So I'm really happy, probably happier than I've ever been, and I think I'm in probably the best place I've ever been in my life.
Does your wife think you're crazy? And is Tiffany the one having all the babies? Who's having all these babies?
Kara and Tiffany, both of them.
All right.
Wilma Scarlett's the little girl, and little Spencer is the little boy named after Spencer
Tillman. Right, Spencer Tillman. Let me ask you this. Does your wife think you're nuts with your travel now?
You know, she's engaged. Everybody in my family is engaged in what I do. I think she understands how happy I am. You know, we'll have our 40th wedding anniversary in October of next year.
Congrats.
And frankly, Scott, if I'm there for more than a couple of weeks at one time, she's like, don't you have something to do? You know, I'm a lot better in short increments, even in marriage.
Okay? Maybe that's the secret.
Yeah, it may be.
Maybe that's the secret. So take me back to congrats on 40 years. That's astonishing. I hope I get there. Let me ask you this question. Take me back to Thursday night, the Duke game in Chapel Hill, calling that one on the ACC Network. How much did you enjoy that game? Duke controlled in the first half, and then North Carolina got back into the game and then stole it in the second half in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was. It always measures up. You know, sometimes Final Fours fizzle. Championships don't live up to the billing. But the Duke-North Carolina round one every year is always going to deliver the goods. This year was no different. I've had buzzer beaters by Austin Rivers, a length of the floor drive by Duhon back in 2004 for Duke in North Carolina. Countless moments that were just off the charts. And, yeah, I know a good portion of the country is watching and listening to Jay Billis and Dan Shulman, as they should. But in the footprint of the ACC, and for those that maybe you have an opportunity to go online and watch what we do, it means every bit as much to me to be doing that telecast as any regular season assignment I would ever get. And, again, I'm very thankful to Fox for allowing me to continue that association with Raycom while they're still syndicating games on over-the-air stations in the Southeast Corridor in the ACC footprint. It was a blast. And the thing that you take away from last night, I think from a basketball point of view, is that North Carolina got everything and then some from its third and fourth options offensively. Kenny Williams had six threes. That's the most threes by a North Carolina player since Hubert Davis. It tied a career high for threes in the Battle of the Blues. Kenny Williams did the same kind of performance, really, that Cam Johnson did. The Pitt transfer, the grad transfer, was off the charts, too. Those two guys in the scouting report of North Carolina would be numbers 3 and 4 behind Luke May and Joel Berry. Those two guys were shut down by Duke in the first half, and Duke controlled the glass. In the second half, North Carolina jumped on them, and Berry and May got going, and then they attacked with ball pressure Duke's guards, and Duke's guards had issues with that. And then North Carolina started doing a great job on the offensive glass. They started getting second-chance opportunities. And Krzyzewski was trying at one time to bring in Marquise Bolden, who played pretty well, and he's been injured. He tried to go with all three bigs, Wendell Carter, Marvin Bagley, and obviously Bolden, and it didn't work. The matchup just was not going to work. And in the end, Grayson Allen threw a poor pass that Theo Pinson pulled off. Theo Pinson is like a lockdown cornerback on acid playing for North Carolina. When he's right, they are incredible. He's got hands of Velcro. He had a stat line the other night that was unbelievable against Pitt. He was one of seven from the floor, but had 13 rebounds and 8 assists and 5 steals. I mean, who has a line like that? And he had a very similar performance, I thought, last night. Did a lot of intangibles in that game that he won to help North Carolina win. But understand this, all those great things I'm saying about North Carolina, I don't think they'd get past the first weekend in the tournament. I think they're too flawed. They need too many guys to play too well too often. And they can have a clunker sometimes defensively. Duke, on the other hand, a lot like some of Calipari's teams, because they're so good and so talented at so many different places, if Grayson Allen can finally figure out when to punch his own button and begin to attack the basket and play with the edge that he has in the past, then I think the rest of the freshmen will come around. But he's been missing in action offensively.
Right.
And I think part of that was because he was trying to be a leader. I think I noticed that in the St. John's game. He was trying to be an emotional leader, but at the same time, he wasn't leading by example by looking for a shot, and that cost him. He needs to make shots late in the game. He's got to look for shots early in the game, and I think that's the problem. For Duke to be Duke, they got to get more than just what they're thinking they're going to get from the one-and-dones. They got to get some action offensively with point production from Grayson Allen.
Yeah, I thought he took some poor looks, and I thought he was facilitating and getting the ball around and making plays, but I thought he took some bad shots. I thought they really pressured the top of the perimeter really well. He was going from left to right and around screens, and he was never comfortable. I thought they totally took him out of his game. You hold that guy under double figures, and you can beat Duke, and obviously they have other guys that are putting up double-doubles and stuff like Bagley, but if you get Allen off of his rhythm, you can beat that team. But listen, Tim, get a good night's rest in the snow in Omaha. Big game tomorrow, Xavier and Creighton on Fox. We'll be watching. Always the greatest of pleasures having you on the bench. I love you. Have a great game tomorrow. Safe travels, and we'll get you back on the bench as soon as possible when you're calling the next big game. Always love having you on CBS Sports Radio, brother.
Anytime, Scotty. It's nice to be with a guy that actually talks about the games in sports radio.
I love that guy. There he is, the governor, the one and only. There's only one Tim Brando of Fox Sports.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.